You're listening to Navid Musa of The Mindset Movement.
Good day, good people. My name is Navid Musa. I'm your host today and always for The Mindset Movement podcast. Looks a little bit different if you're watching this on YouTube. It sounds hopefully the same, if not better. We are in Vegas for the next couple of days, so we're recording these episodes here at the Pride Money Convention here in Vegas, and I am accompanied with JR, Anna and Adam, and we are just going to be chopping it up, talking about private money, the newbie investor way, and just see if we can come up with some topics here to find fruitful to you guys. So we were just here offline, basically, and talking about some stuff, and Anna had a really good idea, saying, "Hey, you know, we're talking about private money lending, we're talking about investing. Well, let's actually walk someone through the process." Like, that's a damn good idea. Let's walk through the process. So here's the process. If you're somebody and you're interested in real estate, the number one question I think that people or assumption you make is you have to have a shitload of money laying around to go and invest into it. That's not the case, right? You can leverage another person's money, private money lending, hard money lending. Now, the question is, well, how, Navid? How do I know? How do I find these people? How do I find a lender out there who's going to give me the money? You'd be surprised that if you just open your mouth and talked about what you wanted to do within your own circle of family and friends, you might get them to help you lend the money or let them lend the money to you. Now, that begs another question. Asking for money can be very, very difficult, right? Who wants to ask for money? I don't ask you for money because I'm asking you for money. I want to ask you for money because I'm asking you for money. And so that's a mindset. We don't ask for money in this business. You have to understand that. You do not ask for money in this business. What you do is you present opportunities for other people to invest their money with you. And that's a big shift there, right? So I'll give you an example. Sure, can I borrow $100,000 to buy a house?
Explain.
Yeah, exactly. Because I'm asking you, your guard's going to go up, right? And your body language is kind of like, right? That's natural, right? It's different. Hey, Jared, check this out, man. I found this property. I talked to my realtor about it already, and we can get it for $100,000. And we ran comps. Comps coming around $200,000. I called Adam and Anna up, and they did a walkthrough already, and they said it's only going to cost $25,000. And that's, we put a $5,000 buffer into there for this house. So my realtor said we can get it for $100,000. Adam and Anna have a bid written up for me. If you're interested, I'll show it to you. For $25,000, and so we can sell it for $200,000. So when it's all said and done, I can list the property for $200,000, have the realtor list it. And after the realtor gets paid and everything like that, you would get back $100,000 plus an additional $10,000 on top of that. I can have this wrapped up for you in about 90 days. I really just need about 5 minutes of your time. You know, those 5 minutes, I'll give you all the documents you need to look all, to see all the numbers, and also it maybe takes you 30 seconds to write the check out. Is that something you want to hear more about?
Sounds like you thought it through, yeah.
Isn't that more engaging than can I borrow $100,000 because I got this house over here that my boy, right? So, and that has to be the presentation you give to an investor. Mm-hmm. That has to be the presentation that you give to an investor that you say, I'm not asking you for money. I'm giving you the opportunity to invest your money and give you a 10% return in 90 days. When you present it in that fashion, there's a whole different conversation.
I'm in.
Yeah, exactly. I'm in.
Look at me.
I'm getting $10,000 in 90 days, and all I had to do was look at some documents and stroke a check. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so, and then the other, so that's one. Right now, how do I find it? That's one way you find money. You have to have your research in it. And my last episode, I talked about educating yourself on the process. So you need to understand that when you are looking for funding for your project, you need to know the ins and outs. You need to know what is actual value. How do you figure that out? You talk to your local realtors in your area, mm-hmm. and they give you the values, number one. Number two, how do I get the stuff fixed? Contractors. People will go on Google and look up the best price for the latest pair of Yeezys coming out so I can get the cheapest price on it. Well, Google contractors then and look for the best contractor. Interview 3 or 4 of them and see who, not necessarily gives you the best price. Who's going to give you the best service? How do I figure out the best service? Here's the best service. Who's on knows who do I know is gonna be the best contractor? Here's how you know it. You get three bids. Contractor A gives you a bid for $8,000. Contractor B gives you a bid for $15,000. Contractor C gives you a bid for $17,000. Contractor B and C, see how close they are, 15 to 17? That's probably where you're gonna be at. The one for $8,000, contractor A.
Something doesn't sound right.
And Adam could probably elaborate on that. This one for $8,000 is going to have a whole bunch of change orders. Oh, it's $8,000, yeah. But you know, how many times, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, explain that.
Yeah. I mean, obviously cheap, that's something I guess some people struggle to understand, that cheaper, you got to stop looking for just cheaper.
Yeah.
Cheaper is not always better. And yeah, I mean, with contractors specifically, a lot of them build into their business change orders. So there's two versions of it. There's like slick ones that are expecting to do change orders, right? So they're going to take it from 8 to the 17 or 15, but they're just trying to get you to sign that bid because they're coming in low. And then the other version is ones that just flat out don't know what they're doing and underbid it so grossly that they're going to get started and then quickly realize, oh, shit,
I messed up
my bid. I'm going to lose money here. And now you got a whole nother problem.
Yep.
So you're better off obviously going with the ones that are telling you the price. They have a detailed scope of work. They know what they're talking about. They're not lying to you. And to be honest, those ones are usually they're not like dying for work. So you're not really doing them that big of a favor, right? So like
yeah.
The good ones don't really need you that much. You probably need them more than they need you. So you need to kind of start to understand things like that when you're getting into a world of contractors and real estate agents and wholesalers and things. A lot of those people, the good ones, they don't need you as much as you probably need them.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're not doing them the biggest favor or saving their life by whatever. So just understand, be a little bit humble and realize that. A, cheaper is not better. Almost never is it better. And do a little bit of homework, like Navid said, and take your time and be a sponge in the beginning. Be humble. Ask questions. And don't assume that, you know all these things when you probably are a new investor, and be open to learn.
So usually when we are bidding projects and we have contractors coming out, we look at all the estimates, and if we have one estimate that is 70% lower than the other two or three estimates, that's the first one that is going out. Why? Because that's the first one that is estimating incorrectly, or is the first one that it's going to come to the work and it's not going to finish it because he didn't estimate the correct amount. If you have three estimates roughly on the same number, just pick one of those three. Don't pick up the lowest or the cheapest because that's going to be your headache at the end of the day.
Well, there you go. I mean, and that's
and if you
it's simple.
If I can, the reason this is important, the point of this discussion was private money for new investors, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Here's the reason why it's important. Because the time that you borrowed the money costs money.
Yeah.
So if contractor A is telling you $8,000, but it's going to take 8 months,
you're out of your note.
And contractor B is $15,000, but he actually shows up and does the work and gets it done on time and right the first time. Contractor B was actually cheaper.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Adam kind of took, some of what I was going to say right now, but that's fine. That's why we work together, right?
Uh-huh.
We kind of finish each other's sentences. It's the cost of money, right? So now we've talked about how do you present, how do I find a lender? Talk to your group. Talk to a group of friends and family. Mm-hmm. You can find someone there. And if not, you can get on Google. And you can actually get on, there's an app called the Meetup app. You can do the Meetup app. Download it. I don't get anything for saying that. You can download it, and then you can look up private lenders near me or something like that, groups near me. You can do that right there. This thing for Vegas, I got a notification for some. It was like dumb luck through something, I think through Facebook or whatever. And so now we've talked about how do you present your deal. Talk about where to find it potentially. Now, and Adam talked about the whole thing with, and both of them spoke about Adam and I, about contractors and how they vet the contractor process. So So now let's put everything together in one smooth motion, right? So you have the itch to get into real estate investing. You don't have a whole bunch of money laying around, but you have good credit. Not grand slam credit, but not bad credit. You have good, average, solid, you know, credit. You can talk to a private money lender, okay? And you have some money. And you can borrow potentially 100% of the purchase price from the private money lender. And you can take some of your cash and use that from the renovation side of things, okay? Once you've done all that, okay, you've come to terms, well, sorry, before you do all that, you have done research on the property. You've talked to an established real estate agent in your area who has found you a property that can yield you some cash. They found a property for you. They've provided comparables for you that show you what it's worth. If it's been renovated, you have spoken to a contractor, have the contractor walk through the property as well. They've given you a bid, hopefully several contracts, like we said, about three of them minimum. And you got multiple bids. And out of those three, you about two of them are pretty close in value, I would say about in estimate. Let's say, 10% differential between the two?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like 10%, no more than that? Okay, so 10% differential in those two contractors. So now you have the house that you're looking to hopefully purchase. You have the renovations involved to do that job. And you have comparables, your exit strategy, right? Your exit strategy is, if I flip this house, here's what it could flip for. Now, there's those two pieces. That's all fine dandy. Let's add one more piece to that. Let's say, like we've seen now, the market has shifted. Mm-hmm. It's not as hot as it used to be, at least not in PA. There's certain segments there, of course, and depending where you're at, some people are still seeing, some people aren't. We're seeing the shift for sure. Let's say it doesn't sell for the amount that the realtor has indicated it could sell for. You need a backup plan. What's the backup plan? Renting it, right? Now, remember, you're borrowing money. And for all intent purposes, right, if you're listening to this, you've got a pen and paper handy, let's say you write down you're borrowing $100,000, and let's say that $100,000 is costing you 10% in 6 months. 10%, which is normal, mm-hmm. right? So that's $100,000. So 10% is $10,000. So you owe your lender $110,000 in 6 months. All right? So I want you to write down in your notebook, and if you want, you can just pause this right now and go grab a notebook and grab some paper and grab some write with, and write down $100,000 purchase price. Underneath it, put $10,000 and put INT, interest, right? And I want you to write 10% beside INT. And that equals $110,000. So that's one thing I want you to write down. Now, next to that, on the far right side or left side, depending where you wrote on a piece of paper on, that $100,000, you're going to put $200,000. This $200,000 represents what the house is going to be worth after you do the renovations. So you're going to put ARV, after renovated value. So $200,000, and then put ARV. Now remember, we said we owe the investor 110 grand, right? So I want you to put the 110,000 underneath the 200 grand. Now once you do that, you're going to subtract it. That's going to give you a $90,000 balance. That's your gross profit. You still have transfer tax and commissions to pay. I get all that. You know, I understand that. So you have $90,000, right? That's your gross profit. From that $90,000, I want you to take out, let's just say 7%. Take 7% of 200 grand. What's that 7%? That 7% represents 6% for commissions, and let's just say 1% for taxes, okay? So you're going to take 7% times the 200 grand, the ARV. So 7% times 200 grand, that's 14,000, right? So right now, you would see, on your piece of paper, it should look like this. 200,000 minus 110 equals 90,000. Next to that 90,000, you're going to put on GP, gross profit. Underneath the 90,000, you're going to write down 14,000. And then beside that 14 grand, I want you to just put in parentheses 6%, or 7% rather, sorry. That 7%, that breakdown is 6% for commissions and 1% for taxes. Again, we're just estimating here. So the 90,000 minus the 14,000 is $76,000. So that's your gross profit, 76,000. That's your profit now at that point, 76 grand. Is what you're going to be making. So if you flipped it, you're still going to make $76,000. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty damn good payday. if it's worth the 200 grand that you think. So let's say it doesn't make, it's not worth 200 grand. Or let's say you don't get a buyer for $200,000. Your next exit strategy is going to be the BRRRR strategy, which is the buy, buy, rehab, rent out, refinance, repeat, right? B with the four R's. Let's say it doesn't sell for 200 grand now, but the lender says, I don't care, Navid, you borrow the money. I need the money back from you. No problem. Remember, we said you have average credit and you did quality work. You didn't go the cheap route. You went quality route. You go to a bank and they appraise this thing saying, I want to refinance this property. So we sell on the left side of your piece of paper. You have your 100 grand for purchase, 10 grand for interest. That's 110 you owe to the primary lender. On the right side of your piece of paper, you have the 200 minus the 110, right? And then again, you're going to minus your 14, so you have a total of $76,000. Now, I want you to go skip like four lines, and I want you to write $200,000 again, right? And then I want you to write, let's say 70%. So underneath that 200,000, right, you're going to skip down a couple of lines, you write $200,000 there, you're going to do minus 70%. What's 70%? 70% is when you get the property appraised for the refinance, you're going to get 70% of its value as a loan. That's going to give you. So you're going to minus 70% of that 200 grand. So 70% of 200 is $140,000. So that is what the bank is going to give you a loan for $140,000. And remember, we owe the investor $110,000. So from that 140 minus, I want you to deduct 110 grand. When you do that, you have $30,000 left over. So you had two exit strategies in this one. One yielded you 76 grand as a flip. The other one is yielding you $30,000, but you now hold the asset and you're renting it out. You're the rental guys. $200,000 home, average rent in our area. What's that going to give you about? How much a month?
Like 18.
1,800 bucks?
18, okay. Grand maybe.
So remember, 200,000 is what it's worth. You got 80, you got 70% of that. That's 140 grand. You pay the lender off 110, you pocketed $30,000, but now you have a mortgage against that property. $200,000 mortgage at about 6%. This is maybe like $1,200. Yeah. Say 1,200 bucks a month. That's without, let's just say with taxes, insurance, and car, let's just call it $1,500. And I'm going to round, that's kind of high, but let's just say 1,500 bucks. And you're getting $1,800 a month in. You're getting $1,800 a month in from rent, you're $1,500 bucks, you're making $300 a month on an asset. Now, I want you to think about this. $300 a month doesn't sound like a lot. I get that. When you're first like, that's it, 300 grand? But look what you did. You borrowed money, which you paid it all back with interest. You're making $300 a month, plus you got another $30,000, right? When you refinance, that's tax-free. That's tax-free dollars, okay? So you got 30 grand in tax-free dollars. You're making $300 a month. You now have also paid the lender back in time. You don't think that lender is going to be wanting to give you back this money? Say, hey, guess what? Put my money to work again.
Your next deal.
Exactly. It's your next deal. Mm-hmm. So you got 30 grand, 300 bucks a month, and you're in an asset that you're not over leveraged at. You have a 30% equity position in this thing.
And the note's being paid down by somebody else.
Yes, exactly.
No.
Not only that.
I have a question. Is it a $200,000 mortgage or $140,000 mortgage?
Hmm. I'm sorry. Actually, you're right. It's $140,000.
So you're talking about more than $300 a month.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Thank you for correcting me. Yes, it's $140,000. We're not $200,000. It's $140,000 mortgage. So actually, that's about, let's just say $1,000 bucks a month in a mortgage.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're getting $1,800 a month in rent. And let's just say $1,300 between taxes, insurance, and the mortgage note. So let's say $1,300 bucks. So that's $500 a month. I'm sorry. So $500 a month you're making. Look at that. Hey, young Padawan over here.
You were testing.
That's what it was. I was testing him. I knew what had happened was I did that and he fixed it.
You got those glasses on. We thought you were sleeping.
I know, man. That's what I was testing. That's what it was. Nice catch. So that's $500 bucks a month that you're making with the 30% equity, and they're paying it down for you. And you got 30 grand tax-free dollars. You can go to that lender again saying, hey, I need another deal.
Second deal.
Here you go. Here's another money.
And guess what's going to happen when you do four or five deals? Exactly. Their terms are going to get way better.
Terms get better when you get more, right? So now you're getting all these deals done. And now you repeat that process. Let's say you what I just said happens. Let's say you do that four times a year.
Oh, your terms are way better.
Well, not just the terms. Mm-hmm. You yourself, individual, right? You're making $2,000 a month now. $120,000 of tax-free dollars that you got, and you own four performing assets at a 30% equity position at each and every single one of them. Mm-hmm. And now, like you said, you go from a 10%, you know, to like, hey, maybe 9%, 8%. Mm-hmm. Right? So we can spitball this as much as we want, but at the end of the day, when you're borrowing money, and if you're a newbie into this business, it comes down to the research. We're going to go from how to ask. We talked about how to ask for money. We talked about where to look for it, how you look for it, and we want to talk about how do you protect it. You protect that investor's ass, your asset and the investor's money. You protect it by that you're doing your homework by knowing, hey, I can buy for this much, rent it for this much, and sell it. Or if I can't sell it, I can rent it, I can refinance out of it.
Right. Multiple exits.
Right? It's always, me personally, I look at three verticals for every deal. Can I wholesale it? Can I flip it? Or can I rent it out? And if I'm hitting two of those three, it's a deal. If I'm not hitting, if I'm hitting two, I'm not doing the deal. With this market, it's got to hit all three. If it hits all three, if it hits two, yeah, that's my personal, but that's a different subject. Go ahead.
What would make it not hit? Is it like if it's not value
right? If it's not value right. So like a lot of, and I'll let Adam even elaborate on this because he's seen it as much as I have. A lot of people over leverage it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. They've over leveraged it, or whoever wants to speak on it. A lot of people over leverage it. So we just had a client who we thought the property was going to appraise for 130. The property came appraised at 156.
156.
Oh. 156,000. So $26,000 more than
that
what we thought.
That was a bowl out of the park. That's like, how you say it.
Yeah. We're like, what? And so he was like, how much do I want to take? I'm like, your numbers looked good at 130. Mm-hmm. You're still going to do 130. That's what you're going to do. You know, he easily could have cashed in on that extra, but I was like, no, but your numbers look fine at this 130 figure. Just take it from that. And that's it, you know? So if it doesn't renovate, yeah. But like, that's all when I do my numbers. I know a lot of people like 80%, 90%. I can get 95% if I put in my personal name. That's all fine, Danny. But those guys and gals ain't going to be around. They won't be around longevity in the business. If you do 70%, that is more than enough conservative. That's the norm.
If it doesn't work at 70%, you should find a better deal.
Yeah, it's not a deal.
So a lot of times we just walk away from deals and we tell our investors like that is not a good deal when we do the numbers. Mm-hmm. Especially because we don't want them to be all messed up.
Yeah, and that's
at the end of the.
And keeping the spirit of the new investor, if you don't find the deal, that's fine. Mm-hmm. Don't feel, you know, because a lot of times we have these, you know, this is being recorded in October, this episode here, for example. And we're like, okay, next year I'm going to kick ass. I'm going to do investing. I'm going to make sure I get something. Right. And so, okay, fine. The year goes through and you haven't found anything. You haven't found a deal. Nothing is coming through. And we get desperate. You're like, I got to buy something. And just for the sake of you saying, I got a deal, you buy something you should have never, ever bought to begin with. You convince yourself. You convince yourself that this is a good deal. I should buy this. I should buy this because X. When no, you shouldn't buy because X. You shouldn't. It's okay. If the numbers don't work, don't work. What is that, Jay-Z, that one line? Numbers don't lie, right? It's just as simple as that. They don't. Numbers don't lie. Here's what the comps say. If it's the income approach, here's what the value is based off income approach. Here's what it is. Don't start saying, well, I know my renovation budget was $50,000, but maybe I'll just make it $40,000.
Yeah, you're talking yourself into it.
And then I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that and stuff like that. Those are the worst deals. And I've done that.
I'm going to work myself on it.
Yes. No. Oh, we talked about that, right? You know, I'll do it on weekends after my full-time job and being a parent and stuff like that. That's the first thing I want to do is on a Saturday is wake up first thing in the morning and go work on a house here.
I'm taking the kids.
Stuff like that. Exactly.
Not happening.
Excuse me. Yeah, exactly. Right. So you're talking like Adam said, you're going to talk yourself into it. And like Anna said, you know, what are you doing on a weekend? You know, now if you're handy, you want to do it, go ahead. But I will tell you this, personally speaking, I'm not handy. Everyone knows me, knows that. I'm not a handy person. If the deal does not work, if the deal only works because I have to do physical labor, it's not a deal. I mean, that's just how I refuse to. That's just me. I'm not going to say, well, in order for it to make it work, I'll do some of this laboring myself. No.
I can paint.
But now, don't get me wrong. There are a lot of you're very handy. You are. I'm surrounded by handy people. I'm not handy. All three of these are, okay?
But now, time is,
it's not a requirement.
It's not a requirement. But if they, you know what? I'm free this weekend. I can do it.
Nah.
Yeah, or if.
Why not? I'll just go in and do it. That's fine. Worth.
If shit falls apart and you have to, okay, it's.
That's a whole different story. You know?
That's different. But yeah.
It shouldn't be a part of your plan.
No, it should not be, right? That's,
if you're
exactly.
investing, it shouldn't be part you of your
shouldn't
time.
Be, you yourself should not be part of the plan to getting right. something. Your job is saying, assess
this
it. It looks
my
good.
Plan.
Here's the funding for it. I'm stepping away.
Yeah.
And I'm going to work on getting the next deals done. That's it. Now, having said all of that, I do highly recommend if you go down this path of investing and go down this path of learning this process, when you lock up your first deal, go and meet your contractors on a weekly basis.
Mm-hmm.
Go there and see what they're doing. Ask them, hey, I'm not handy, but I know how to put on a switch, a light switch, or I know how to put this plate on here or whatever, screw something. Just get an idea what these contractors do. And I strongly recommend that when you first start this business, even if you're saying, listen, I don't know if I want to do this, talk to someone who's in the business and just see, can I shadow you? Can I go look at one of your projects? Can I go check it out? Because when you do that, you get an understanding of what these contractors actually put themselves through when they bid these jobs. It's easy to say, well, I can put that door handle on. I can put that light switch on. I can do this. I can lay that carpet. I can go ahead and put the molding on. It's only four nails. You're being stupid and naive. I'm sorry, there's no way to say it. You're being stupid and naive if you think that all these contractors do is run to a big box store, come back with a whole bunch of supplies and just pick things up and put them down and hang them up and leave. It's more than that. There's a lot more than that, right? So no one tells you how to do your job. Please don't tell a contractor how to do theirs. You hire them for a reason. You know, so we're going to wrap this episode up about this one here. Well, before we wrap it up, is there anything else? Did I miss anything? Did you guys want to say anything?
I would say, well, if I can, you said about, I think it's a good point, is people set goals. Like, we get that a lot of people come to us and say, I want to buy 10 doors this year, or I want to buy 20 doors in the next 2 years or whatever. That's great. But if those 20 doors don't come along at the right numbers, you should be prepared to not.
Yeah.
To complete your goal.
It's better to not reach the goal than to force the goal, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good point. For those listening, if you have these goals, don't think you're a failure because you didn't accomplish the goal.
Yeah.
If you didn't accomplish the goal because you didn't do shit, that's a whole different story.
That's different.
If you didn't accomplish the goal because, hey, the opportunity never presented itself. I mean, I had this come in front of me, but I just tried it and the numbers didn't work. Okay, that's fine. But that's absolutely fine. I mean, you talked about it for a while before you found something. We found you something. It took a while. Everything had to fit, and it fit finally. So, yeah, thank you for bringing that up. Just because you set a goal of having 20 doors by this time, you don't get 20 doesn't mean you failed or you force it. It just means, hey, I tried. The opportunity wasn't there. Okay, perfect. That's fine.
And I'm doing good deals. Like,
yes. I'd rather have 5 solid deals than 20, than 10 shitty deals.
In this last year and some change, there's a lot of stuff that came across with the – that we're not.
No, we passed on a lot.
Passed
on a lot of deals because they weren't deals. Like, no, we can see where the market is shifting. No, this is not going to work.
We feel that those deals are coming soon, somewhat around the corner. It should start fitting in the box a little bit better. It was a seller's market in the last year and some change, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's good past 2 years.
You got to be patient sometimes.
Yep. Be patient. And the other thing is, as a first-time investor, not every lender, hard money lender, it's going to allow you to participate of the program. Most of these hard money lenders, they're looking for experience and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You also need to be aware of that and have a team that takes you over or shows you how to go through the process.
Yeah, that is the expectation. So on the next episode, we'll actually, to keep these short, sort of, we'll wrap this one up here, and then we're going to come back, and then we're going to talk about managing expectations when you go to borrow the funds, right? We talked about the deal structure just now. So this episode, we talked about the deal structure, you know. How do you find the money potentially? How do you ask for it potentially? How do you find the deal and how do you structure everything? Okay, that's all fine. Now let's talk about the expectations of, you know, hearing the word no. And why you may hear the word no, but I want you to listen to something else in there. And we'll go back. The next episode, we'll talk about the expectations of borrowing money from a private lender or a hard money lender. All right, so that wraps up this episode here. Again, we're in Vegas this week. And if my wife is watching, I promise you, babe, we are working.
Shout out to RS Media.
We are.
Yes, RS Media. Thank you. I was going to say that. I was talking about RS Media. This is another episode we're doing here. This is RS Media in Vegas. It's an amazing space. This is really cool. It's nice and open. This is very nice. If you're ever in Vegas, Google RS Media. If you wanted to do a podcast, never did one, ask them, interview, you know, talk to them. They'll set you up, stuff like that. I'm not tech inclined. We just sit here and talk, and they do all the work.
They did everything.
So this is awesome. Yeah. So wrapping up today's episode from Vegas, like each and every week I said the same thing, just do right by the client. I promise you. If you just do right by the client, everything else will fall into place. And sometimes that means doing right and taking care of yourself. You could be your own client. All right? Be good. Be safe out there. And we'll see you all next week or next episode. Take care.